No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us questions at BBSRADIO and the number 1. Maria's on vacation tonight. So we have a surprise guest who will be on in a minute. But first, I need to go over a few things because I was out last week. I was on vacation visiting my daughters in Chicago. My daughter, Trisha, who is an honors graduate of DePaul University, and her sister, Mary, who is going to the University of Illinois, Chicago. They decided to get an apartment together, so my wife and I went out to help them get settled, and we had a great time, and it was great to spend time with the both of them. And then we left there and saw more family, so it was kind of a family reunion tour. We had a great time. On a sad note, I have to tell you that comedian and activist Dick Gregory passed away the other day, yesterday, I believe. And this is significant to us, not only because he was a great activist, but he was very much involved in the statehood movement. Dick Gregory was a man that I knew personally. His daughter, Ayana, who's a very talented singer, would sing at our statehood functions, and Dick came and spoke to us many times. He was very kind to me personally, gave me good advice, and was always very supportive, and we're really, really going to miss him and his input and his gracious spirit and his wisdom and the fact that he always spoke truth to power. This is a very hard thing to do, but he always told the truth. And just one quick story. The last time I saw Dick Gregory, he spoke at our annual Emancipation Day celebration where we're having breakfast with the mayor and the chairman of the city council and many other politicians. And there we were celebrating in a room with about 100 people. And Dick Gregory stood up to speak and he said, "Why are we celebrating? Why are there 100 people here? There should be 10,000 people here. This is an issue that we should all care about. This is an issue that we should take to the streets. And this is an issue that we should celebrate when we have 50,000 people gathered." So again, he always spoke truth to power. We're going to miss you, Dick. Please rest in peace. Our condolences go out to his family and his dear, dear friends. And also on that note, we should mention that Jerry Lewis passed away as well. And you know what? I was not a big Jerry Lewis fan of his movies and stuff, but he did so much for muscular dystrophy. He gave back to the community, and I think we should always honor people like that. So again, our condolences go out to the Lewis family. You know, his son, Gary Lewis, had a band, Gary Lewis and the Playboys. They had several hits back in, 1970s, I think, when I was in college. So my condolences go out to the Lewis family. He was a great man. He did many great things for other people, and he was loved by many people in the world. So our condolences go out to him. Last week, we had a guest on named George Farrell from an organization called Black Pack, and I think he was very, very interesting guest. Maria handled things. I wasn't here. I think that I want to have him on the show again. He said a lot of things that made a lot of sense to me, about how the Democratic Party has ignored African Americans and how we've lost support. And I think those things are important. But I also noticed that he said some things that I really feel that I need to straighten out. For example, he said that Donald Trump, he admired because he bounces back from defeat. Well, that may be Mr. Farrell's opinion, and it may be the opinion of a lot of people. But in my opinion, he doesn't really bounce back from defeat. He lost his businesses in Atlantic City, for example, but he drove many little people into bankruptcy. It wasn't about bouncing back. It was about using other people to continue to do what he did. And so I think that was that's a little overstated. And he also said that that we have to be careful of who we elect to lower offices. And I think that's true. But he said one thing was school boards. You need to be careful about school boards, because before you know it, if you elect liberals to school boards, you could have them pushing for Sharia law. Now, that, again, Mr. Farrell, unfortunately, is an overstatement. I don't know of any school board anywhere in America that supports Sharia law. He also said that abortion, he was against abortion because he really didn't want to get involved in your personal life, but he didn't want government to have to pay for abortions. And where would that stop? Would it stop with facelifts? Would it stop with, other surgeries that might be considered elective? Well, I understand that, but that's really not the point on abortion, because people that are against abortion, the politicians that are against it, they're trying to interfere in women's lives and make it illegal. It's not about paying for it. It's about making it illegal. You shouldn't be able to tell a woman, in my opinion, and this is only my opinion, you shouldn't be able to tell a woman what she can do with her own body. And I think that's really the issue. It's not about really who pays for it. It's about whether it's legal or not. So with those few exceptions, he was on for an hour and he said a lot of important things, and we hope to have him back. And Maria did a great job, and I think he makes a lot of sense when he says that we haven't paid enough attention to problems in the black community, and that's why we're losing the support of black people. And we saw that in the last election, where African Americans didn't show up at the polls. It's not that they voted for Donald Trump, but it's that they didn't show up. So I hope that people will call into the show tonight, and because I don't have Maria with me, but I do have a special guest. I have that man about town, that bon vivant, a political wizard, and just a great guy, Doug from BBS Radio, who's going to join me and save me from making a fool out of myself. Doug, are you there?
That is hilarious. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me well?
I hear you well. And I read you too. But let's start and talk about some of the interesting. Let's start on the light side. We've got the eclipse coming. What's going on with that? I know it's the first coast-to-coast eclipse in about 100 years, but it seems like we're going eclipse crazy. There's some little town that's on whatever they're calling that line where you can see the whole eclipse. There's some little town in North Carolina that's got 23,000 people, and they're thinking they're going to have 250,000 people show up.
Amazing. I mean,
amazing.
Amazing. People willing to go out, take a vacation to see an eclipse.
Yeah.
That's. That means the economy must be doing pretty good.
Yeah, well, maybe that's it. Or maybe people are so worried, they're hoping for some sort of divine intervention to come, you know, because historically, you know, thousands of years ago, these were seen as, you know, religious events.
Yeah.
when they had an eclipse.
Yeah.
And I got to say, the one funny thing, one funny tweet I saw last week is somebody on our side of the statehood issue sent out a tweet that said, Congress, Washington, D.C. is angry. Grant us statehood in the next 10 days or we will block out the sun and turn the day to night. So, you know, I thought that was a clever take on the eclipse. But yeah, it's just wild. Even my son, now my son's given it up. He went to the beach, but he and a bunch of friends were going to drive down to North Carolina, South Carolina, I can't even remember, and camp out just to watch it. And, you know, so I don't know what's up.
Well,
but you're out there in California. That's, you know,
yeah,
you guys are famous
capital.
For this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The spiritual people all, it's an omen. It's a predictor.
Yeah.
It says how life's going to be over the course of maybe the next few weeks or months. Personally, I'm not too big into all that, even though I'm very spiritual. I don't understand it, really, how one can look at the stars and say, oh, based on the location of this star this year, it's something significant in your life. I'm not quite sure.
Well, I was raised by a woman that embraced every superstition known to man. Couldn't break a mirror, pass a four-leaf clover. My mom was superstitious about everything. But we have to put a little warning out there. Don't look directly at the sun. Come on. I just read an article that said in the last eclipse, there were hundreds of people that had their eyes damaged from looking directly at the sun. So don't do that. And now here's the next warning. Don't bother buying a Powerball lottery ticket because I plan on winning the $650 million. I know in my heart that God wants me to have that money. I've already figured out how to spend about $450 million of it. So save your money. I'm going to buy the one ticket, and I feel it. Maybe that's something to do with the eclipse.
If you won $450 million, what would you seriously do with it?
Well, I give a lot to – first, I vanquish all my enemies. That would be the first – you know, I wish that I had a better soul. But, you know, I would – all these people that – like my annoying – I have a neighbor who's constantly annoying me. I would probably dedicate my – you know – donate my house to a home for wayward prostitutes or something, you know.
You wouldn't build a wall.
Yeah, build a wall. Yeah. I'd give a lot to charity and I would relax and buy myself a different color Ferrari for each day of the week. I think that would be the start of it, you know. And you know, I always look at like 6,000 square foot apartments in Manhattan that they want $45 million for. You know, I always think, yeah, if I won the lottery, yeah, I would definitely. Well, that would be Donald Trump's apartment. I would put a bid in on Donald Trump's apartment. But speaking of eclipses and luck in the lottery, you're going to go to Burning Man. Tell me about that. What do you think about that? You've never been in.
Boy, my twin brother and I, we have not taken a real break, except for a couple days to meet a business partner, in 14 years.
Wow.
We work easily, a slow week for me might be 90 hours.
Wow.
And I can get over 100, and we work 7 days a week. Christmas to Don and I means You know how you get really excited your month before, and you. Well, we don't. You don't feel that when you're us. You feel the day of Christmas. You open your gifts. You spend a couple hours, and that's Christmas. And you don't feel anything leading up to it, which is a little sad because I love that feeling. I really did.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
This Burning Man's a chance for us to get out, be crazy, get wild, see how other people get wild, and mingle.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool event. I don't know a lot about it, but, you know, it seems like a Woodstock-esque kind of event. And you know that when I was a teenager, I was 15 when Woodstock happened, and I remember people. I'm not that far from there. I'm, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours. And I remember teenagers that I knew that were going. And they were like, there's this music festival. And I'm like, what's that? You know, I mean, I didn't understand what it was at the time. I'm not sure they understood what it was. You know, they just heard about it. And I remember people going. And then afterwards thinking, damn, I should have gone.
Right.
It would have been so much fun.
Right. No, I say, take this was on our bucket list. I've got a couple things, not many, but I'm starting to make a bucket list, and this is one of them. And though we're going from hot to hotter, which is crazy, the California in August, you don't want to be here. I mean, I used to love summer, and now August is my least favorite month. But we're going into another place that's even hotter. I think we might be a little bit nuts, but that's my brother and I. I mean, why not?
And where is this? It's in Nevada?
The northern part of Nevada, and the real problem there isn't, I mean, the heat gets maybe 95 to 100, but it's the wind. The wind can pick up at 60 miles, 70 miles an hour, and you have talcum-like dust. Literally, it's pulverized dust that just goes into everything. It gets you in your nose. It'll get you in your rear. It'll get you in your ear. And that's what you have to deal with. And your vehicles come out there. They aren't really prepared for it. The dust will get into every nook and cranny. And it'll take a new vehicle and it'll turn it into an old vehicle, a bike. If you don't want to bring anything new, I hear. As a matter of fact, they give us a list of 70 things to bring. I still don't know if we're going to be prepared. I kid you not. We've been preparing for this for a month. Couple months, and then they got us doing all these chores because we're newbies. So as a newbie, you get involved. The key is you got to get into a camp. You just don't go. There's camps there that have a name associated with them, like the Peace Camp or the Pepperland Camp. And then they take care of your food, and sometimes they have showers, and they have all these different functions that little camp puts on for everybody. So we became a part of a camp, and with that comes the chores, the cleaning up, the cooking, the bringing the water. Like, we had to cook meals for, I think there were 30 people in our camp, and we had to cook meals and package them and get them all ready in for 10 days. That's a lot of work.
Wow.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for 30 people.
Right.
Now, do you have to pay anything to be part of the camp?
Right. Well, the first year we paid $250 each. And, of course, you get your tickets at price. You're getting your tickets at like $450 versus paying, you know, a month before time, $1,000. So you get your tickets at the regular price. And you pay, you know, if you're you've been there 2 years, you pay $100. Each camp is different. But that money goes into giving the food and setting up the different tents and so forth. We're actually leaving a few days early because if you ask me to help, I'll be the first guy with a shovel at your back door. And we're going to help set it up. And then I'm leaving a few days late. My brother's going to, you know, we got to get back here. But I'm going to stay a few days and clean everything up as well.
Wow. Do you have any idea how many people they expect for this thing?
70,000 plus.
Wow.
70,000,
really? Is there any like prepared program like there was at Woodstock? Are there musicians? Are there speakers? Are there
every camp has, let's say, a dozen or 20 or 30 different things that they are putting on. Like one camp might be a massage camp and maybe erotic massage and then wellness associated in all these different ways. So different tents you go visit in this camp that deals with wellness, massage, and body. You might go to another camp and they're all about food, or another camp and they're all about peace. So it's happening all over.
you got all these different camps, and it's a sprawling place. So what you do is you just go out and you try all the different things. And then the main event, of course, is the burning of the Burning Man at Sunday night. And then try to get out of there. You won't get out of there.
And but Bon Jovi doesn't show up and play or anything like that.
I hear some of them do.
Shows up. Yeah?
Yeah, they fly in on their, was it Leonardo DiCaprio last year flew in on a private jet, landed in the sand, and came on in? Yeah.
That's cool.
But I don't, I don't know if there's singers or, there probably is, but I don't. In our camp, we got all this every day. They send you every day for two. I couldn't read it. I can't read it all. I just don't. But I'm supposed to. Yet every camp probably does the same thing. But if you ask me what there is everywhere, I'd just say it's endless. The amount of information we were sent, endless. I don't know what to do with it all. I couldn't put it all in my head.
Wow. Well, it sounds like it's neat, and I hope that you and Don have a great time out there, and I can't wait for you. You know, we've got to be able to interview the both of you guys when you get back, because I just love to know what it's all about. You know, I find it so intriguing, and it's funny, at my age, I've read about it on the internet, and at my age, I talk to people about it. I say, well, we're not going to be on the air, we're going to run reruns for a couple weeks, because the people at BBS are going to this thing, and people my age don't know about it. They go, what's that? And it's hard for me to believe that they don't know about it, because it's on the internet and it's on the news. But mm-hmm. I've run into a lot of people that have no idea what it is. And so I think, you know, just as a public service, we'll have to, you know.
Well, you learn how to clean. One thing I've learned, they have strict, very strict rules.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they do not like is anything, even your wastewater on the sand. You can't go leak where you want or throw a wrapper where you want. Afterwards, they clean up even the sequins left on people's shirts out of the sand. Literally.
Wow.
They make sure that they leave it as pristine when they came as when they leave. So yeah. That's really – and if you go around and you bring something, let's say you figure, okay, I'm going to – bring these gifts, because everybody has something to trade, right? You don't bring money. The only thing you can spend money on, I think, is ice and coffee. But you want something to trade. And if you have something to trade that's kind of trash-oriented, you know, has wrappers and everything associated with it, they call it a moop or a M-O-A-P, something to do with just it's a trash-oriented thing. Don't bring it. And they really frown on you when you do.
Well, and why this spot in Northern Nevada? Is that where it's been traditionally, or does it move from year to year?
From what I understand, it's right in that area. They might have had to move. There was a complication at one point with the people that actually either owned it or the government, where they didn't want to allow this to continue, but I guess they settled it. And so they have that at the same place they had last year. But as for prior years, I'm not sure. But I do believe they're all in the pretty much the same vicinity.
Well, you know, we used to go to a festival when I was in college. We used to go to a festival that we called Doodah. It was Camp Town Races. And you know the song, you know, Camp Town Ladies, sing that song, Doodah, Doodah. Well, they had at the farm where the Camp Town Races were, they for 100 years. They had the races, and people used to go, and you would make side bets and stuff. But it was a big festival, and I mean, it was really cool because you had everything from bikers to people that showed up in their RVs with their families, you know, and people would bring food, and there were vendors and stuff there. But it was a lot of fun. But after a while, I think I went to it twice while I was in college, and they shut it down after like 110 years of doing it.
Unreal.
Because of the traffic and the additional police protection,
right,
and stuff that they had to do. And the state was no longer willing to accept the cost, and the people that owned the farm really couldn't afford to put it on because they didn't charge anything for it. You know, so, and I think they might have tried to charge one year, but that really didn't work out. So it's a shame. You hate to see those things end.
They tried to do it here.
Great time.
They tried to do it at Burning Man, where they wanted the people who put Burning Man together to pay for all these luxury accommodations for police and other organizations to come in and make sure everything was on the up and up. I mean, overwhelming, from what I understand. So, yeah, the government wanted in, and they not only wanted in, they wanted the ability to have, you know, the accommodations and everything else to their liking. And I guess there's a big hoopla about it. I don't know how it all ended, other than I know that it did end, but I've heard that. And there are costs associated with it, and that's why they're so careful in making sure that everything is clean when they leave.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a great idea, and I hope the government doesn't shut it down, because, you know, they can be such killjoys, right?
We need that. We need that. All kids today are playing on the internet. They don't know how to socialize. They'd rather be on their phones, and if we don't allow these gatherings to continue where people can socialize, I would really think, what's the future going to bring?
Because there's no necessity anymore. You know what I mean? Right. You can go through your whole day without ever talking to another human being. You can go to the ATM and get your money and go to talk into the clown's mouth and get your lunch. And, you know, you really don't have to interact with people anymore. And it's terrible. I completely agree with you that, you know, we see them on the cell phones all the time. Even when we were in Chicago, I was just in Chicago with my daughters. Even, you know, sometimes you have to say to them, hey, you're eating dinner with your dad. Put the damn cell phone away. You know, whoever it is, call them after, you know, or text them after the meal. We don't get that time, much time to spend together. And it's just like second nature to them to shut you out. And I think, yeah, I think that's, I think you're right. I think it's terrible. And I wonder what impact it's having on us as a society. And if this in any way explains how divided we've come, because, you know, the what you're talking about with the Burning Man, different camps, for example, is that what's happening in America? Are we all breaking up into these little cells where we don't need to interact with each other anymore?
I was thinking about creating an app, you know, get married online and you never have to meet your wife.
Oh, well, that's a great idea.
You never really do have to communicate. Yeah, why not? That seems to be where the world is going, and I hope it doesn't continue. And this, I think, is a standard, it could be, in showing the world that, yeah, the communities can get together and have a lot of fun, and we should be.
Yeah, we should. And can I just add a friendly amendment to your app? How about for us older guys that have been married for a long time, an app so that your wife can bully you, but not in person? You know, she can bully you through your cell phone, but she can't actually bully you. And that's the biggest mistake. I know Mrs. Brown is listening, so I have to be careful. But that's the big mistake. I let Mrs. Brown get all the children on her team. So now she has an army to back me into a corner, and she uses them. And the kids that all the time, they're like, "She's right, Dad. No, you said that, Dad." And I'm like, "No, I didn't." They're all on her team. So if you're newlywed and you have children and you're a man, work to get them on your team. Don't let them gang up on even the dog. But when we were in Chicago, one of my kids, who's 24, my daughter, decides she's going to sleep with my wife on the air mattress and snuggle. And she says to me, "Well, you can snuggle with the dog, Dad, when you get home." And I said, "The dog doesn't snuggle with me. The dog snuggles with mommy. They all snuggle with mommy. I'm out there, you know, by myself. And the kids and the dog, they're all together." So modify that app. You know, I've got to tell you, while you're talking about apps, probably the most brilliant app that I've heard of is some mother who couldn't get her teenage son to return her phone call. She would call him or text him. She has developed an app that if she calls him and he doesn't return the call within 10 minutes, his phone shuts down. And the only two numbers that he can call are her and 911.
That's brilliant.
It's brilliant. Australia. So I don't know what the name of the app is, but, you know, anybody out there with a teenage voice should get it. But, you know, back on track about this thing about people being so separated. You know, what's happening in the world? What do you think about this? We have this terrorist attack in Barcelona where 13 are dead.
Ignorance. It's really ignorance. Here, I heard a man yesterday put it so appropriately, a doctor, yeah. So brilliantly. In fact, it made me think. Because he basically said there's a faction that believes in liberty to the exclusion of government or taxes. And what they don't realize is that every system that's ever gone the direction of total liberty without, let's say, a government or without taxes or representation of any real kind, they've all failed. He said there's never, ever been an example where they succeeded. And yet you have these people out there fighting for those liberties and the ability not to be taxed and not to have representation. They don't see the good part of it because they haven't been told that there's good parts of it. And I think it's really due to a lack of education, per se, or the right kind of education. Maybe we just don't teach that there are other opinions, and it's great to have 30 different points of view, not one, to be able to see around a table and say, oh, you've got it. Oh, that's good. But they're all different than yours. Today, you have a professor that gets up in front of a class or a teacher, and they have a point of view, and they direct it towards a student. Nothing else will do, in their opinion. I don't think we need to teach people that way. So I think that, you know, how we approach people and their opinions and the way we value diversity, even thought diversity, needs to change. We need to tell people in school that different points of view are brilliant, they're important, they're necessary, and we need to think about them versus shutting ourselves off from other ideas and other people.
Well, you know, once again, great political pundit that you are, you've hit the nail on the head, I think. And, you know, John F. Kennedy, that's what he used to do. He used to like to get, you know, that was his management style. He liked to get a lot of people in a room that had different opinions and hear what everybody had to say before he made up his mind. Yeah. And, you know, my dad used to say, you can never learn anything new from somebody that agrees with you.
Isn't that
you
true?
Can only learn, yeah, through disagreement. When somebody expresses a different point of view, if you're open-minded enough to look at it and think about it, maybe it changes your mind. Maybe it doesn't, but maybe it does. And that's really the only way we can progress. And this terrible thing that happened in Charlottesville, you know, I have mixed emotions. What happened in Charlottesville was terrible.
Right.
I have mixed emotions about the statue thing.
Right.
I'm not sure that we want to sanitize history.
Right.
I don't know that we want to celebrate the Confederacy, but I'm not sure that we want to get rid of, you know, our history and sanitize it so that we don't learn from it. I heard Tim Kaine, the senator from Virginia, say something that I thought was spot on today. He said, you know, they talked about the statues in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Some of these Civil War heroes like Robert E. Lee are in the Capitol. And he said, you know, it's not so much about removing the past as it is adding to the past, adding to the culture. Not, you know, the Robert E. Lee statue was put in 1909. Mm-hmm. And every state, I don't know if you know this, but every state has two statues in Statuary Hall that they're allowed to put in Statuary Hall. Right. And he said, you know, the two statues for, by the way, with the exception of Washington, D.C. They didn't allow us to put any statues. Can you believe that? And we built two. We built one of Frederick Douglass and one of Pierre L'Enfant, the man who designed Washington, D.C. Oh. And just 2 years ago, they let us put one of them. Now we have Frederick Douglass in Statuary Hall. But other than that, we only get one. But everybody else has two. And in Virginia, they put in George Washington, the father of the country, who was a Virginian, and Robert E. Lee, also a Virginian. But he said, you know, what about Doug Wilder, who was the first black governor in America, who was a veteran, who was governor of Virginia? You know, what about Arthur Ashe, the great tennis player? What about, you know, there were so many people, and maybe they should change them periodically. Sure. Maybe they should leave them there for more than 100 years, you know, because our history changes and moves on. So I think they put some state has put together a panel to review what statues go where. And I think that's a good idea. I think if you could get people to get together, but again, you know, it's right back to what you were talking about, getting people to get together and sit down at a table and talk to each other and respect each other's opinions.
Well, one of the things that worries me seeing the youth today is the culture change from an idea of history being important. You know, I know my father and generation before my father, their name meant something. The name.
Right.
And the history that comes with that, even their word meant something. You know, if you broke your word, that was really bad. But in today's society, you don't see kids running around talking so much about the history of their family or the importance of that name or where they came from. We're kind of a melting pot. In fact, if you start portraying, oh, I'm an Irish Scottish, and that's all, maybe you're a racist because you came from that stock. And so you don't have that identity anymore. And so you're losing even a history that's close to us, our family. The history of that doesn't seem important anymore. So how can you make the history of the world seem important anymore? So it's the perfect time if you're a revisionist and you've got a billion-dollar company and you want to put 300 people in a room and rewrite everything on the internet, which so many of these companies, they do this. They have people, and that's their job, literally, to go out there and do what they can to change what's already down. And that's a little bit sad. Now, on the spiritual side of me, you know how the spiritualist would say, the true spiritualist, you're living in the now. You know, history is now, the future is now. You just be open to the now. So even with the emergence of that culture, it's getting rid of the understanding that history is a powerful thing to know. So it worries me. It worries me.
Well, me too, because on the other side of that coin, as it says on the archives building here in Washington, past is prologue. What happened in the past is bound to happen again in the future. Yeah. And that's what bothers me. You know, the communists in communist China, for example, when the communist revolution took over, they got rid of all their history. Mm-hmm. Kids in China aren't taught about anything that happened before the revolution. Right. My sister went over there and said they didn't even know what the many of the people she met didn't even know what the Great Wall of China was.
Right.
Because, you know, if they were too young to, you know, if they were born after the revolution, they're not taught about that stuff. And it really, I think, is a real danger, because people that don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny that this just popped into my head. But while we were with our kids, we watched a movie, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I don't know if you've ever seen it, the best line in the movie is the history teacher says to one of them, who was Joan of Arc? And the kid thinks for a second and goes, Noah's wife? And that's unfortunately, you know, I think true. I think kids don't, you know, they don't get it.
Yeah.
And that's another problem I have. Where does it stop? You know, Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner. George Washington was a slave owner. And, you know, in the very famous Chicago 8 trial, they chained Bobby Seals, who was the head of the Black Panthers, to a chair because he refused to be in the courtroom with a picture of George Washington on the basis that Washington was a slave owner. So, you know, the revisionist history thing bothers me. But I got to be honest, I don't think that President Trump could have handled this any worse than he handled it.
Oh, I agree.
I can't, yeah, you I know. Agree.
When and we have Taboo, by the way, on line one, anytime.
Oh, we do. All right. Well, let's hear what Taboo has to say. He's always interesting.
Bring him in.
Taboo, how are you?
Okay, great, Senator Brown.
Yeah,
I was enjoying the conversation.
Well, let me first say that I know that you're somebody that knew Dick Gregory, too. So, yeah, what a sad day it is for our movement that he's passed, huh?
Most definitely. Most definitely. And you said it so well, Senator Brown. I thank you for that, and we all agree.
Okay. So what do you what's your comment, Taboo? We always want to hear from you.
Well, I was just admiring some of the things that you were talking about, you know, and I think the key word to all of it, you know, is what Doug was saying. The key to all of this, I think, is education.
Yeah.
You know, too often we, you know, I think we think of education as being, you know, just the formal aspect of it, you know, that which we get at the structured institutions. But, informal education, that which you get at the home and the community at large is so important. So what you're doing right now, and that's why I thank you, and I really, you know, appreciate your program, because this is a form of education. And,
yeah. And
as you all were talking about, we are social beings. You know, and if we don't talk to each other, then we really going to have some serious problems. Not necessarily just talk, but we really have to continue to interact. But it took me back to, I think, when you all started talking about several things you'd mentioned. You mentioned, I think, abortion.
Yeah.
And I when you talk about it, you know, I questioned myself. And that was some of the things I often, you know, I'm not a female. You know, I feel a woman has the right to do whatever she wants with her body.
Right.
However, then I say, well, a child is really not her body, but she's in charge of it. So it's complicated. So I went back
it
to
is.
Something. Yeah, but let's look at this. How we are educated in this society, our value systems, our values according to, I think, political values, I should say. We're guaranteed certain basic things, and all laws are supposed to be based in it. You know, and that's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, I ask the question, if we're guaranteed life, does that guarantee that you want to kill anyone? It's just a question. I don't know, but I go back to my basic principles. Are we guaranteed life? How does that relate to abortion? You know, and then I went on to the next. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
No, I just want to say about that that's a problem I think we have as liberals, that we talk down to people and we say, you know, things like, if you're not for a woman's right to choose, we don't want to talk to you. Because you're right, it is a complicated issue. I believe that women should have the right to choose, but I understand why people don't want abortion. It's a complicated issue. I was raised a Catholic, and I understand how they feel about it, you know? And I agree with you. I think that the way to deal with these problems is to sit down at a table and discuss all aspects of them and not just toss them out. You know, we tend to toss them out. You know, you're either for a woman's right to choose or you're ignorant. And I think that's terrible. I think it's wrong.
Yeah, well, at some point, I want to get with you on that. Hopefully we can go a little further on that, come to some solutions. But a couple other things I wanted to mention, particularly about statehood, when you mentioned it somewhere that, yeah, well, you know, it made me think of the clips of, I think it was 1504, when Columbus, I think it might have been his last voyage, his fourth voyage, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I often ask myself, what would have happened had it not been for that eclipse? And I was wondering, what impact would that have on the rest of the world? You know, what actually happened, you know, I think of his last voyage is, his ships were, the worms, you know, eating up his ship. He lost two, and they finally made it to, I think, what's modern-day Jamaica, I believe, and the Arawak. When he landed there, and they had fed him, was taking care of him for about 6 months, but they got tired of feeding him. You know, he couldn't go back out to the ship because the ship, you know, weren't seaworthy. So they were getting tired of feeding him, and they told him they weren't going to bring him any more food, no water, so a lot of the men mutinied, and they just ran off and killed a lot of the natives, and it was a very terrible situation. So Columbus didn't know what to do, it seemed. So he knew that there was going to be an eclipse. I think of February something, 20-something, I believe, 29, February 29th maybe. And he tricked the natives. He told them that his god was going to punish him or something. But he told them if they didn't bring food to him and do as he say, then his god was going to take the night light away. So as the eclipse approached, he went back in. You know, he did his thing and came back out. And to make a long story short, he tricked them into saying that his god was going to take the night way, and after the eclipse was over, they gave in, saying, you know, his god was superior, and they brought him food and took care of him until other ships came to rescue him. And I often wonder what would have happened, had that not happened.
Well, you know what? That's always been, unfortunately, I think, a tool of politics right from the beginning of time, is to play on the ignorance of the people that you're dealing with. You know, that Huey Long used to say, there's 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans and your house could burn down and your baby could drown and not one of them Frenchmen would care, you know, to pit people against. And, you know, when people go, yeah, I know the French, they're not nice people. You know, to blame your problems on, use your ignorance against you. In fact, the same exact thing that you just explained happened. That's how Kamehameha ruled Hawaii and brought all the tribes, the fighting tribes in Hawaii together, was his army went and fought a superior army, but a volcano went off. The volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii, forget the name of the volcano, Kilauea maybe, and it went off and destroyed the other army. And he said Pele was on his side, you know, the goddess of the volcanoes was listened to him, and everybody said, oh yeah, you know, and he used that to unite the tribes of the warring factions in Hawaii. So it's a really old trick, and I think we're still using it today. You've got President Trump out there saying that people that are marching in the streets of Charlotte that killed that poor woman and are screaming, Jews will not replace us, and blood and soil, which was a Nazi slogan, you know, that they're equivalent to people that were there to honestly protest the cause that they believed in. I think we're still using it against each other, and I think it's terrible.
It's very terrible, Senator Brown, and I think we really need to look into that a lot further because something is not right there. But, you know, I did want to say one other thing, and you are doing a great job educating today, you and Doug, but I did want to say one thing about those statues. And, we have here in Washington, as you were mentioning, what we don't have in the Statuary Hall, but we do have a statue, if I'm correct. Don't we have Albert Pike here?
Yes, we do. And Albert Pike and the mayor and our Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton and others have come out and want him removed.
But you see, the key shouldn't, in my opinion, when we look at this, race is a misnomer anyway. You know, how many races are there? But the key, what we should be talking about with these statues, these are Confederates. This was treason against the country, not race.
Well,
we should be looking at the Treasonous Act, I think.
Yep.
And
it was.
And you know, and here we are. We have treason being committed right to this day in our government. So our problems are centered around a corrupt government. Now, you can see what's happening in the Democratic Party. You talk about how many blacks didn't vote for him. A whole lot of whites didn't vote for him either.
Democrats. That's absolutely true. Right. And
people
I understand
have
the pain of black people in the Democratic Party because I've been involved for a very long time. And you know what? They treat us exactly the same way in D.C. They take us for granted. And I think a lot of African-Americans feel that from the Democratic Party, that they're taken for granted.
Right. Well, remember one of your earlier program some time back, we were talking about how corrupt local politics are here. And yeah. I think we might have kind of differed a little bit on one thing there. And you talked about how it was so much easier to corrupt at the local political level rather than at the top. Well, I think now we've seen real corruption. I mean, big, huge corruption at the top. And I think it's not being talked about enough. And I think we really need to talk about the corrupt political system that we do have, and particularly in the party, which most of us are. I'm a registered Democrat, and you are. Were you independent?
No, I'm a Democrat. Still...
Yeah, well, okay. I heard someone say you had left the Democratic Party. I didn't think. Well, thank you for correcting. But you know, that's what I'm just saying. So the real problem, as you all were saying, is education, and I think you're doing a great job. And this is what I would consider informal education in your project here on your program today. And I thank both of you guys. And on that, I'm going to leave you alone.
All right. Well, thank you, Taboo. Thanks for calling in, as always. And thanks for being an activist, because I know you're out there, and we see you, and you know, and you're an important part of the dialogue, and we appreciate it. Jim, we'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Thank you.
So what do you think, Doug? We're almost out of time here, so let's get some final comments from you before you go off to Burning Man, in case you never come back, in case you go into the erotic massage camp and we never hear from you again.
Maybe we should force everybody to go into school and have to live in another country with other race, other people. And maybe we, you know, instead of having just one school, you can't just go to Harvard. You've got to go 1 year at this school, 1 year at this school, 1 year, you know, different places. Maybe that forces people to see the different cultures, the different points of view. There's got to be a way to do that somehow within our system so that we can, you know, open our eyes, our hearts, and our minds. I believe in America. I believe in the goodness of people. I think there are very powerful a group of people, a few, that are making it you know, tough for all of us to look at each other in the right way. You know, when you have media that's controlled by very few people, and their agenda really is to keep headlines that keep you coming back. And, you know, if those headlines have to create, you know, a bunch of fake news or create hate, and they don't look, you know, they don't push the alternative, which is really the love angle of it, then we're going to continue to see this sort of abuse of information. And that's, I think, one, we should also look at that a little bit. You know, before, in Reagan's time, we did have fairness doctrines where the media, you had to show both points of view, or at least give time to that. Today, you know, that doesn't make you any money. You just, if you have reporters, you can't afford to pay them. So they're all getting it from singular sources. The people at the top, their point of view became very, very important. And that, to me, is really dividing our country as well. So I think there are a few things we need to look at. But I have hope. I do. I believe in people. I love people. When I go around to the community and I shake people's hands, I know there's a lot of good people there. It's just the media doesn't seem to portray it, and they rile a lot of people. And when you're in your corner and you're sitting at your computer and you haven't really gone out a lot, and all you're doing is you're scanning headlines all the time and putting a lot of nonsense in your head, not only nonsense, but a lot of good stuff in your head, you don't really meet the people. You don't really get out there enough and see the other points of view. And technology today is doing that to us. It's really pushing us where we're getting in our own little cubby holes, our own little world, and we're putting a bubble around us to suit our needs and or our wants or our thoughts. And that's, you know, it's just a shift. It's a shift. I mean, I'm sure my dad looked at me and said, you know, when I was a boy, gee, I can't believe what this world's going to. And now I do it with children 20, 30 years younger than I am, and I'm sure that when they get our age, they're going to be saying the same thing.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I say it all the time. You know, my mother, who was, you know, who thank God, exposed me to people like Cole Porter and the Gershwins, used to listen to the Rolling Stones and say, you call that music? And I say the same thing to my kids now. I listen to Kanye West and I go, you call that music? But yeah, I would add to what you said just one thing, because you said it so well. You know, that now, with the internet too, anybody out there can find people that agree with them. Right. You know, I don't care how crazy you are. There's somebody on the internet that you can find that agrees with you. Mm-hmm. And you do need to go out and you do need to meet the people. My kids made fun of me because in Chicago, I go out and I walk every morning. And when I was out there, I would say hello to every person that I passed. Half of them looked at me like I was crazy. but you know what? For the half that doesn't look at you like you're crazy, you connect with them. And that's a good thing to do. So, well, we're out of time. And thank you so much, Doug, for being part of the discussion. And we want to leave you tonight in honor of Dick Gregory and Heather Heyer and all the other victims in Charlotte and elsewhere around the world. We want to leave you with the Morehouse College Glee Club, and We Shall Overcome. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks when Doug gets back, assuming that Doug gets back from Burning Man.
Thanks, you, America. Senator.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.